and blood in their ancestry. So this conversation makes sense, but it's not the only one.
Yeah, I mean, I would agree with you completely. And I think that the other thing is that if we look at it, you know, really it's only in the last couple of generations that the percentage of Latinos and Asians has risen to the numbers it's risen, because those are the two fastest growing populations that we have among racial groups. And when I was growing up, the conversation was really about white people and black people, and it has been for most of our country's history. And so as a result of that, you know, we've got these new dimensions. Now, one of the challenges that happens as a result of that is, because we cut our teeth on conversations about race between white people and black people, we often make the mistake of applying the same lens to the dynamics, let's say, the Hispanics or Latinos deal with, or that Asians deal with. And they're different. There's a different quality to it. There's a different quality having been immigrants versus being brought here as slaves. There's a different quality because of the success that's been allowed to happen in those communities rather than other communities. The fact that, for example, that so many Asians came here as immigrants, in some cases coming from very high positions in the societies that they left, or for example, all the Vietnamese immigrants who came here, who came from people who were government leaders or professionals who left as a result of us losing that war, came in at a very different place than people who were brought here in chains and were denied education and were denied opportunity and even denied to allow to read for generation after generation before they weren't. And so as a result of that, the gap between white performance and black performance in the society is by far the largest gap of all the racial gaps. And therefore, it makes sense that that would be the thing that would occupy most of our attention.
You know, I just had somebody's been on my show a couple of times, and actually he's going to co-host with me sometimes. His name is Patrick Tindana. He's from Ghana. And he talks about the difference of, he's 35. He's also gay, and he had to leave Ghana because he's gay. And he talked about, though, coming to the United States, and he said that there's no way that he could, I mean, he has to deal with racism, but he said there's no way that he could really understand the trauma that African-American people have been here, been through in the United States, having all these like generations of slavery and generations of dealing with the kind of racism that they've had to deal with. Since in Ghana, he said, you know, most everybody's black.
Right. Yeah, I have a good friend who comes from Ghana, actually, and he talks about this all the time. And John is coal black, I mean, very, very dark-skinned man, came to this country as a student. But his father was seven generations descended from tribal royalty and is now a government and business leader. And he said he grew up as a prince. You know, he didn't grow up as somebody who was lacking anything. He grew up in the aristocracy in his country and then came to this country. And so whatever racism he deals with doesn't hit the inside. He doesn't suffer from post-traumatic slave syndrome, as Joy DeGruy calls it, or some of these internalized patterns of bias. And I've noticed over the years that I've known him for many years, the way he deals with racism is quite different. It's like, you know, fool. I mean, it doesn't get internalized. I mean, he might get angry about it, but it never gets internalized. He just thinks people who are racist are idiots. And because he comes from a place where black people occupied the highest levels of government, the highest levels of business, the highest levels of science, the highest levels of the academy. And I think that's very different to somebody who grows up in the United States, where you're always the other, where you're always less than, where you don't see people like yourself very often in senior leadership roles. And you begin to, people understandably begin to internalize some of that bias and start to think maybe there's something, not even think, but it's more of feeling, an unconscious feeling, there's something insufficient about me for who I am.
You know, when I was on Michelle's show, you were at the studio when we used to record a coffee. She's now at CBS, so she's doing really well. But I did a show on Asians in the race convo. It was a really great conversation. I'm going to do it again on this show. I think it really is important to be able to hear other people's experiences, because some people don't realize that everybody's experience is different, and that different cultures, that people experience racism, and some of it is the same, but then some of it is also different.
Well, and we know that we have the intersectionality that's always happening. So even within a given ethnic or racial identity group, there are some commonalities and some things to expect, but there are a lot of things that'll be different based on the overlay or the intersection of sexual orientation, especially the intersection of socioeconomic experience and status, you know, age, of course, because a lot of folks who are in their 20s, my goddaughter is 23, and you know, the group of young adults that she grew up with, you know, they've had a very, very different experience than the folks in my generation based on race. And so it's so complex. That's part of what makes it difficult. But for me, that's part of what makes it so fascinating.
Mm-hmm. I could talk about this forever. And I know I want to have you two back on, because now it's just, I have this show, I'm going to have like a lot of repeat guests. But I think that it's important to address, at least to touch on it, because it's so deep, about what's been happening the last couple of weeks. That first, I mean, things are always happening. I mean, well, people call always, you know, it's kind of like this constant thing about getting the police called for like drinking water or breathing. But also the fact that like at Kroger's last week, two Black people were killed because they were Black. Then we have all the bombings, I mean, attempted bombings. And then we have the massacre at the synagogue. So I want to know, what are your thoughts on that? And also, what can we do so that we could start, so we can work towards eliminating this kind of hatred?
Well, wow. What are my thoughts about that? I mean, it was a horrific weekend, obviously, for all of us. And I think that, you know, I think that there's a collective shock throughout the country and how to deal with this. And it was also so sad to see how we immediately, people immediately got into their, you know, defensiveness about the obvious, which is that the language of our politics has gotten to the point where it's beyond. I just posted a blog about this, and it's one thing to say, go protest. It's one thing to say, you know, be confronting or whatever else. It's something else entirely to say, punch the guy, you know, stomp on him, to extol the virtues of body slamming reporters. And I think we have a real challenge right now in that the greatest proponent of hate speak in our society is the President of the United States, and he justifies this behavior. I'm not suggesting that he wanted people to do this or he told people to do this, but when you have unbalanced people out there who can go into their Walmart and buy an AK-47, and you hear the President of the United States giving justification for violent behavior, it makes it one step closer for us to have this happen. So I think we have to, obviously we all have to tone down our rhetoric, but particularly the person who's got the loudest voice in our society needs to show some leadership and to recognize that these kinds of things are unacceptable. And to come out just 3 days after, or 2 days after, the CNN received pipe bombs, and again be talking about the press as the enemy of the people. That's different than I disagree with them. I don't think they're reporting fairly. I don't like their bias. There are all kinds of ways you can say what he's trying to say, but that's not what he's trying to do. The bottom line is that Donald Trump's entire political career is built on building fear and loathing between people. That's what he saw was there. That's the tsunami wave he decided to ride, and that's where he falls back every time after he reads his prepared statements.
Tracy.
What I think, what my thoughts have been, similar to what my thoughts often are when we have multiple events, because I know this is happening, these kinds of things are happening every day somewhere. We just only hear about the really big ones, right? And so there is a part of my thinking process that, you know, is I'm tired, right? The fatigue of being hit over and over and over. But the biggest, most commanding thought is that we as a society are being given an opportunity. So I go back to this kind of the spiritual foundation of life itself and really see it as a choice. As a society, as a nation, are we going to choose evil and hatred and death and anger? Are we going to say, okay, we finally have had enough and we are going to live our lives and build a country where all of this diversity is accepted as a part of who we are, and we can do that in unity and harmony and move toward a greater good? So my thoughts, you know, kind of go from that one extreme of, oh, here we go again, to it's a call for responsibility. It's a call for prayer. It's a call for action toward what we want instead of against what we think is wrong, which just generates more of that. And the how do we do it? I think it does call for people of what I think of as having the spiritual imperative for unity and harmony. It calls for us to really say, okay, this isn't enough. We have to do whatever we have to do that comes from a place of building love and respect, not duplicating the anger, the disrespect, and the death, the killing. Other than that, in a big picture, you know, I don't know what the specifics are. We vote for leaders as Howard just described. You know, are we going to hold our leaders accountable? Are we going to hold Congress accountable? Are we going to hold the Supreme Court? Well, they're appointed. We don't elect them. But are we going to hold the people we elect accountable for leading from a different place of collaboration, of communication, of connection, of true representation of the majority of people? Or are we going to continue to elect people? Or in our organizations, are we going to continue to reward leaders who are divisive and who are judgmental and who push competition more than collaboration, or not?
Yeah, look, I think that the one thing that's really important for us to recognize is that this didn't just sort of organically develop. This nastification of American politics did not just naturally organically develop. This was a defined strategy. I mean, in 1978, Newt Gingrich burst upon the scene as a professor, as a college professor, telling a gathering of young Republicans, one of the great problems we have in the Republican Party is that we don't encourage you to be nasty. We encourage you to be neat, obedient, loyal, and faithful, and all those Boy Scout words, which are great around the campfire, but are lousy in politics. And then in 1990, when he became majority whip, he actually had his PAC send out a list of words to use to describe Democrats to demonize them: decay, failure, collapse, deeper, urgent, destructive, destroy, pathetic, liars, liberals, unionizing, you know. And so this was a very conscious strategy on the part of the Gingrich-led Republican Party to put nastiness into American politics, because they were smart enough to know that people don't vote rationally. We vote viscerally. And if you can make people, if you can demonize the enemy and make yourself look strong by demonizing the enemy, then people will gravitate towards you. Now, that puts people on the other side in a very interesting position, because if we do as Michelle Obama said, which is just, you know, when they go low, we go high, it doesn't stop them from doing what they're doing. And what they're doing actually does trigger those old brain responses. So finding the way to hold on to our own moral footing while at the same time dealing with that is a real significant challenge. And it's one that we're going to have to take on in a much more sophisticated way than we have.
Wow. This has been such an amazing conversation. And I love talking to the two of you. And this is, you know, I guess the only way I can have long conversations with both of you is to just have you back on the show.
Fair enough.
Because I know how busy everybody is. And I want to ask both of you if it's one thing, that one point that you want to make, that you want to share with people, and also, how do people reach you? How do people get in contact with you?
Good, Tracy.
Okay, so Tracy, you go first. How do people get in contact with you? One point, how do people get in contact with you? And if you have any books you want people to buy.
Easiest way for people to get in touch with me or to find out more is to go to tracybrown.com, and that's T-R-A-C-Y Brown. .com. No E's, no I's. And you can also find out about books and programs there. The one point that I would want to close with and make sure got stated is that each one of us is a valuable contribution to shift, to change, and to transformation in the world. And I just want everybody to step into that in their own lives, and the ripple effect will change our collective lives.
Thank you. Howard.
Yeah, for me, I think that the easiest way to reach me right now is at howard@udarta.com or howard.ross@cookross.com, either way. I think I would say two things. I think the first is, you know, I know that I felt this weekend probably the greatest sense of hopelessness and helplessness than I felt in a long time. And there's a part of me at times like that, and I'm sure that there's a part of many of our listeners who feel like, I'm just sick and tired of politics. I want to put it away and just ignore it. But I realized, you know, when I even have that thought, that that's an act of privilege. that walking away from politics is an act of privilege. Walking away from being a participant in our democracy is an act of privilege, because there are people who don't have the accessibility to influence people. There are people who don't have the accessibility to get the message out there, who are more deeply affected by what's going on in our society today. People of low income, people of marginalized groups, whether that's racially marginalized or LGBTQ people or women. You know, we didn't even get a chance to talk about the whole misogynistic aspect of society today. And so I think we have to stay engaged, but at the same time, we have to take care of ourselves. And then the second thing is vote. You know, we had this election coming up next week, and it's shocking how few Americans vote. We have to get out and vote. We have to use the mechanism that we have in front of us. Even with all the challenges we have with voter suppression and all of that kind of stuff, we still have to vote.
Yeah, and people don't realize, too, that sometimes, like, voting impacts just minimum wage, rent.
That's right.
Climate, so many different things. This has been such a great show. Everybody, you've been listening to Sima Lieberman, The Inclusionist, with Everyday Conversations on Race for Everyday People. If you like what you heard today, then please go to www.raceconvo, convo like conversation, raceconvo.com, and listen to more episodes. If you really, really like what you heard today, then please share this show and share my link and share the show with all of your friends, colleagues, and anybody you ever met in the whole wide world. And if you really, really, really like our show and you want to see us continue because we run the show on donations, please go to www.raceconvo and make a small donation. No donation is too small. Large donations are cool too. But Sima, and you could hit me up at Sima@SimaLieberman.com or on Twitter @TheInclusionist. Thank you so much. And until next time, Sima, The Inclusionist, Everyday Conversations on Race for Everyday People, signing.
My show. We're at Bender's and it's fun, and we're hanging out here at Counter Offer. Oh, Greg just moved around. He doesn't want to be involved in that. Whatever. It's cool. The lesbian.
thanks so much. We are Farrell from Minneapolis. It feels good and weird to be back in San Francisco. Mostly just weird. Yeah, we got a couple more. Thanks so much for having us. Thank you.
Minneapolis here at Bender's on a Saturday night, May 12th, I believe. How awesome is that? Why don't you go to Bender's more? It's only $5. Hear rad bands from Indianapolis. I wish I knew their name. Maybe they'll say it. Not my show. My show at Bender's, 806 South NS. Great music every Saturday. $5 every week. Why don't you come down? This great band's coming out of Minneapolis. What are you doing with your life, motherfucker? We'll be right back. was a band. I don't remember what the name was called, but it's not my show. We'll remember later. Okay, bye.
Hey guys,
you sound great.
Hey America, I don't have headphones because
we can't figure out what's wrong.
We are so broke that we had to sell my headphones just to be able to afford the abundant amount of candles we have to sustain ourselves.
And it's too many.
Frankly, Perry, that is deeply insulting.
Ew, I just made the grossest sound into the mic.
Did you hear that, America?
Today we thought we'd talk about family stories. Oh, but I had a preamble.
Go preamble.
Do you remember when we drank wine recently? Very recently. I spilled wine on these leggings and I picked them up off the floor and realized. And now I realize that they still have the wine. I never washed them.
I love you. You see, that's nice because halfway through the podcast, when I get tired, I can just suck the wine off of the upholstery of your pants.
Yeah,
get a little
buzz. It's 10:01 a.m. and it's time to get crunk.
I mean, it's 10 a.m. somewhere and the answer is here. So it's time to get fucked up, people.
Hey, could I ask you to hand me my coffee?
Oh my God,
yes. Is that possible?
Absolutely.
Thank you so much. Do you have anything to say at the beginning?
Yeah.
What's up, baby girl?
It's freaking me out because I don't have headphones on. I'm like, how do I?
If you could get closer to the mic, maybe.
Me.
Because your mic is all the way up.
Oh, is she really?
Yeah, I'll turn myself down.
Bam. Oh, don't even worry.
Okay, you're good.
Yes. Perfect. So actually, I don't have a preamble. I'm just really hyped about these family stories because...
Oh, your family is so fucking odd.
Take it from me, America. I come from odd stock. Strange stock.
Yeah. But, you know, you're doing great.
See, that's what people tell me, but they say it with this little glint in their eye that makes me feel like it's not
just
as true.
A little twinkle of
doubt.
Ingenuosity. Ingenuosity is actually the word that I wanted to say. I couldn't think of the word.
See, I could just look into her tiny little eyes and see the word bouncing around in her tiny little noggin. So I found it. I pulled it out. Genuosity.
We're starting that word.
Starting now. What do you want to talk about? Do you want to go?
No, you kick it off.
Woo!
Girlfriend.
All right. So, let's start with a story about my aunt that Perry loves. Oh my God. I love this story as well. So my aunt has been married to my uncle, I guess, for, probably like going on 15 years, and they've been together for like 25. And very recently, my aunt has night terrors very often. And recently she, I guess in her sleep was like speaking in tongues, like just making these demonic noises. Like her voice was, it was just very exorcist-esque.
I forgot this part of the story.
Did you? It's hilarious.
You know what it is? Sorry, continue.
No, don't worry. And then so her husband wakes her up and she's like, Brent, why'd you wake me up? And he looks at her, earnest as can be, eyes wide as saucers, and is like, do you believe in God? It's just so funny. Like, first of all, what a goddamn question to ask at like 3 a.m. after speaking in tongues. Secondly, like, did he never ask her before? Like, did he not know? Like,
25 years,
and he didn't know if she believed in God or not. And that
that's insane to me.
That's like a good palate cleanser for my family. I feel like that just like ushers it in there.
Yeah.
But yes.
I think that's very funny, and I wonder if she answered him. I also think that's funny that your uncle didn't say, like, are you okay? He was like, hey, let's make sure she at least believes in God so we can exorcise her.
At least that. I mean, you know.
Is that how you say it? Exorcise?
God? Oh, yes, yes. That is how you
God.
Say it.
Is it good or God?
Goad?
I've heard both.
Jode.
Chode.
That is the correct pronunciation.
We are very religious women.
My God thinks my jokes are funny.
Yeah, you know what? My God thinks my jokes are funny too. I don't really believe in God, but I do
Perry.
Believe in people laughing at
Perry. Oh, that's true. That is gone.
Ew, I want to throw up because I just said that.
You can. You absolutely can.
Oh, one time my brother choked me as a joke at a family reunion.
A little choke joke?
A little choke joke, joke. You know, the classic. And a very religious and like sweet but very like earnest and kind of formal, beautiful
just more adjectives.
It was like a wife to my cousin. I don't know what that would be, but she saw him do this and the look of horror on her face. And we both started laughing, but she was like, I mean, I can't act that out, but she was terrified.
I think that the wife of your cousin is actually your wife, right? Legally?
Yeah.
Is that how it works?
Yeah, I think so.
That's what I've heard. What's another solid good one? Okay, so my mom is very normal appearing, you know, like very like normal demeanor. Like you'd meet her and be like, what a normal, lovely woman. But she like drinks fucking soy sauce, does like vinegar shots, like
fuck.
Yeah. When she does do like vodka shots, she like will she drinks it as if it were the viscosity of like maple syrup, in that she like pours it in and then holds the glass there waiting for drops to drip out, and it's like, it is dry, mama.
Oh my god, did she finish a bottle of soy sauce?
She has finished bottles of soy sauce.
Just drinking it.
And she like, whenever we go out to like Asian restaurants, she'll make a little concoction of vinegar and soy sauce and like chili oil and just leave it there as like a palate cleanser for the end of the meal, you know? Like she's like, well, I'm so excited for my little and then we'll like just like sip it out of the plate in full view of all humanity. It's like, girl.
She's so put together, but then, we all have our weird things that we do.
We certainly do. That is hers. That is absolutely
one
of hers.
That's so funny, though.
Thank you so much.
What the fuck?
What the fuck, man?
I feel like that would be so bitter.
That's why I was so dehydrated as an infant. I came out as a tiny little prune because all she did was, like, eat salt and drink soy sauce.
Oh.
Yes. Yes,
I'm sorry.
My soft spot was shriveled up like a raisin.
What was I going to say? This isn't necessarily a family story, but I go to camp.
Camp.
I go camping every summer and with like my friends and family. And one time when I was probably 10 and this, my brother's friend was 12 or something, he bought a machete. Or no, you know what? He must have been 18. Yeah, he had to be 18. So
did you say he was 11 and then he was switching to 18? All right, yeah, sure.
Oh, wow. This is fake. You're finding out. No, it's real. And he bought a machete, and it was a cheap machete, but he just bought it to buy it. And he would like bring it out at breakfast and stuff.
Just casually like polish it in front of the family, making deep eye contact.
Yeah. Yeah, it was really scary. So that's something that's fun. Also, he framed me. I'm not kidding. He put a stink bomb in my, but he didn't throw it so it went off. He put a stink bomb in my suitcase and was like, Perry stole one of my stink bombs.
Whoa.
I know. It was a bad thing.
Little devious boy.
Yeah, they're mean.
Fuck that. If you're listening to this, that guy, fuck you.
I fucking just realized I didn't record this whole thing.
That's okay. We are still charming. Hey, guys, if you're listening on the archive. Oh, okay. Cool.
Yeah,
never mind.
Good.
That's good.
We're figuring out how to do this thing.
I have a similar story to that, kind of, I guess, in that very recently I went to a birthday party for a child. Mm-hmm. I didn't know the child. That's a bit of a lie. I didn't know them. I'm not just like wedding crashers, but with children's birthday parties. And I had been shown a picture of this child prior, though I had never met them. And family members were like, oh, like, you know, you're going to this party. Like, do you know how old the kid's turning? And I'm like, oh, I think like 11 or 12. And I get there and it was full on this child's third birthday party. So I have no idea how old a child is on site.
I'm but like, you could be already met the child.
I had seen them before in life. I had not like interacted with them, but yes, I
three.
agree, Haley?
11-year-olds can form sentences. 3-year-olds are like, bleep, bleep, bleep.
Well, I mean, this kid has some rockin' hair, so I think I was just blinded by the bangs.
Does he have bangs and like long hair?
He's got a sweet mullet going on.
Oh,
it's really great.
Yeah, you do. You mentioned they're a hip couple.
They're a great couple. I feel like I should just talk about how hip they are, but I won't.
Yeah,
I
you have guys. Been. They sound very cool. We're gonna meet someday. I saw a kid at a park recently because I was watching some other kids for fun.
you didn't know them, you were just observing.
And then I said, oh, there's another boy I can pay attention to.
Wow,
hire me, guys. It's Perry Borders. I can take care of your kids.
Woo!
And he had like long hair and a snapback on, and he was probably like 5 or something. And I was like, you are cooler than I'll ever be, sir.
Please take my wallet. Please.
And then his mom came and she was like wearing vinyl leggings and was just jacked. And I was like, what is this fucking family? You're amazing.
Just jacked, like buff as fuck.
Yeah. Oh, she was amazing.
Oh God. I feel like hot dads and buff moms. Those are the two like cryptids that I long to view in my everyday life. Just like,
what does cryptids mean?
Oh, like Bigfoot's a cryptid, Loch Ness Monster's a cryptid. Just like cryptozoology is like the study of
have animals.
Have
you never seen them?
You know, I think he's avoiding me there. After the Loch Ness Monster, who is in fact a lesbian, is avoiding me after we matched on Bumble. So I get it. It's okay.
She's not really in the place for a relationship right now, and she didn't want to, you know,
disappoint me.
Yeah,
you know,
sometimes it's hard to say it, you know. And she's so big.
She's so big. See, that's the first thing that attracted me.
It's hard to get on a computer, really.
Those touch screens are not really compatible with like a tail, you know, with like a what's the word, prehensile.
Honestly, I don't think you're being grateful enough that she's talking to you.
Hey, I am so fucking grateful, Nessie, if you're out there, if you can hear me.
All right.
I'm so sorry. Shouldn't let my personal life get in the way of my profession. What's another good story? I don't, what's another good, like, eating story? There was one instance where my grown-ass cousin, who's fully 30, I walked into his home, and he had just eaten a tub of cream cheese and a jar of capers. He'd just eaten it.
Holy fuck. What is your family? They look so normal.
Yeah, he's...
You know what? Didn't you tell me that one of your...
What?
Please. One of your families ate, like... eggs, yellow mustard.
Oh God. Oh wait. Sorry. Oh my God. Okay. So this is my cousin Dale, who's like 80 years old and who, this is
makes
unfortunate.
Sense.
When he was a child, his head was ran over by a car. Dark. He looks very normal though.
How?
I don't know.
Normally it's like a watermelon. How could you ever get run over by a car? Even just the side of your face, how could you get run over by a car?
I don't know, babe. It was like the 40s. I don't fucking know.
You know what? You didn't tell me this, so now this makes sense. What he's doing.
He would eat like hard-boiled eggs. That's oxymoron. Like soft-boiled eggs with like the runny yolk in the middle, with like gravy and yellow mustard, and just like